Hey, Brian. It's been a while. How you been, champ?
Not too bad. Kansas City's a little wet and rainy, but, you know, it is springtime, so that's to be expected.
Well, yeah, we're supposed to be getting some thunder and rain today. It's one of those days where, like, I'm thankful that I don't have a home match to go to, though I suppose I could go to the Spirit game tonight, but I'd rather just sit at home. Find some very
many
large...
Americans don't want to go to the Spirit these days.
Yeah, it's been difficult. There's going to be a great book written about that one day about the internal struggles of that team. Also, incredibly snake bitten. I mean, I don't think this has been discussed enough, right? So they lose in like the last 30 seconds of the game, and I mean, if there is any team that is as, I mean, I don't know, and then they just completely dismantled it, and it's to watch like them now, it's like, I mean, they've gone back like 5 steps. I don't know, you don't really see this much in soccer, do you, where teams essentially have a fire sale?
When you do see this, it is exclusively because a big team suddenly has fallen, big teams outside of the United States and Canada have, and Australia should be also said, because the A-League is basically like a cousin to the MLS. Basically everywhere else in the world, a big team falls afoul of relegation, and they can't convince everybody to stay. Fire sales do happen, and that's the one and only time these days you can actually find a good bargain.
The only thing I can think of is Portsmouth, but that was because they had no money. Rangers,
no money,
too.
Placed first ever Premier League team, and will only, and going forward, as the TV money keeps on rolling up, they will forever be the only team that will always be the only one to go into financial administration with points docking from the top division of England.
Yeah, it doesn't really happen that much. Actually, it was interesting. I was watching this morning Celtic versus Rangers. And
woof.
One, that was an annihilation. Two, I don't think... I mean, by the way, Celtic's undefeated. Is it really that impressive that they're undefeated at this point? Like, the SPL is not... I don't want to.
It's
like,
not what it was 10 years ago.
No, I think that's very fair. I don't...
When there were 2 Champions League spots for the Scottish top flight, you had 3 Europa League spots, and you were able to. It was pretty obvious. You had the likes of the Dundees, the Aberdeens, the pair of Edinburgh clubs of Hearts of Midlothian, which has an American captain, and a Hibernian. Kind of making up the 3 to 6 spots, and then 1 and 2, both Glasgow teams playing in the Champions League group stage, occasionally getting into the knockout rounds, making, you know, that third place run into the UEFA Cup, now known as the Europa League. Things have definitely changed, but kind of happens when you don't qualify.
Yeah, I agree, and I mean, I guess we're like 5 years past when Celtic last made it to the knockout rounds of the Champions League. When they played against Barcelona, they had like some crazy 1-1-0-0 draw in Barcelona Stadium, which is now completely escaping my mind.
And a lovely win. I seem to remember watching that facing up against Barcelona, pulling out a rather dramatic 2-1 victory. They ended up facing Juventus, if I recall, in the round of 16. And for them, financial move like that, I mean, the non-Premier League UK leagues, when team does get into that knockout phase, that money does come into play. Take the Irish team who made it to the Europa League a group stage. 1 win in the Europa League, and they had more prize money than winning the Irish League.
Rost your death, man.
And that was Dundalk. That was Dundalk, the team in question.
Rost your death is a huge, huge determining factor who goes through in these games. And, I mean, even against the likes of, like, a Dortmund versus a Monaco, I mean, it, you know, just Monaco had, I believe Monaco just has just that much more in terms of depth and in terms of money that it matters, you know, maybe a goal or
they have. Yeah. So with the Monaco ownership, to kind of give it some clarification, you have a Russian billionaire who initially took over, who started spending money like it was going out of style. He only bought 70%. 30% is still owned by the Prince of Monaco, the royal family, so they still have a little stake in the club. That's why you saw, well, I mean, obviously you would show up at a big Champions League game at home, but started spending a lot of money. Falcao was one of the big names. James Rodriguez also, those two guys were bought in the same summer. They spent money like crazy. Mm-hmm. Then the gentleman happened to get divorced, took a lot of money away, so they came up with a different financial strategy of buying young, understanding that you would have to sell these guys on, but developing these players. And suddenly you were able to get runs in the Europa League, runs in the Champions League. This is the second round of the Champions League, and I believe the last four seasons, though, this is what some people would say even better than the team that made the 0-4 final, losing to Porto, if I'm not mistaken, in that set final.
Yeah, they look like they're going to be a handful. And good for Radamel Falcao. I mean, it's good to see him back healthy, doing well. And, I mean, I think it was right around the 2014 World Cup. I mean, this was the can't-miss prospect. And to see him finally fully healthy again, I think it's just a... It's a testament.
Fully healthy, playing in a good system, because the last 2 years in England were a waste.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. He was with Chelsea, right?
Chelsea and Manchester United.
Yeah, not exactly places right now that give you time to be able to develop. I think playing in Monaco helped too, because it's not a big... I mean, it's a big soccer power, but because it's such a small principality, it doesn't really have a whole lot of people watching it, really. So it's kind
attendance-wise, it's a small stadium, it should be said. Stade Louis II, which used to host the UEFA Super Cup every year, it's now on a rotate. It now kind of goes from place to place. Only holds 18,500, and it's always been, well, I should specifically say, Nice, the team in France, who happens to have Mario Balotelli at present and is in third place, and at this point they're going to make the Champions League qualifying round at the very least. They're big rivals, and they love to joke the fact that they can bring more away fans. When Monaco was really bad, they could always bring more away fans than home fans would show up, but such is not the time at Monaco. You show up when you're good, because that is the fashionable thing, but the hardcore support that most football clubs enjoy, that is hard to come by, and that's not exactly a place you'll find with Monaco.
So, we're watching right now Wolfsburg versus Bayern Munich, and, I mean, you and I, for our generation, Wolfsburg has been an incredibly talented club, and I would say either...
Talented with some American connections, I should also might add.
This is
Brian
true.
Brian McBride, who was there when they were in the Zweite Bundesliga, which is the commonly held name for the second division of the Bundesliga, I should say. Most people don't understand it. That incorporates the top two divisions of Germany. The TV money is handed out on an 80-20 split for the top division and the second division to ensure that the second division has clubs with enough money to provide a competitive atmosphere. So before Wolfsburg got to the top division, the Bundesliga, they had the likes of Brian McBride. They had Claudio Reyna playing for them in the mid-90s. Two names that Americans all see as legends. And yeah, they plied their trade with Wolfsburg, the same club that finished 2009 Bundesliga champions, and as recently as last Champions League, took Real Madrid right up to it in the quarterfinals of the Champions League.
So why is there such a slide this season? What's been causing
one,
issues?
For anyone who has paid attention in the news, Volkswagen's kind of been as apparent. Wolfsburg, the club, was set up by the Volkswagen Automotive Company as a team for the fans, and eventually they just earned their way as promotion up. The company the way that Bundesliga, all German clubs are set up, is a membership basis. I happen to be a paying member of Eintracht Frankfurt, but the, most teams, they run off of their memberships and just the administrative way that the teams are set up. So attendances are hugely big. TV money is also big. But with the likes of Bayer Leverkusen, funded by the Bayer Corporation, the pharmaceutical company, just like with Volkswagen, those two teams have been able to maintain great success by being a part of this corporation club, set up originally as a team for the fans, not like Red Bull Leipzig, but I can go briefly into that a little later. Wolfsburg is experiencing difficulties due to the fact that they've been paying big wages to players who haven't been producing for the last couple years. Nicholas Bentner has been one. Julian Draxler really didn't pan out. Andre Schuler really didn't pan out. These guys were on massive wages. When you don't perform, you don't get the Champions League money to continue to be able to attract the big players, and all you can do is pay the big bucks. And in this case, the money is just not working this time around. They're a little scared for relegation. And with Volkswagen saying, hey, we're pulling out of, you know, we're going to supposedly slash your budget by half next year, this club is in a situation where, because of the parent company's issues, and this is a very tiny stadium, only 30,000, and it's not usually full, relegation means no one will show up. That means the gates are going to be bad. You can't get the you get relegated. It's a 80-20 split on that big TV deal, the most expensive TV deal in Europe outside of the Premier League. It's bigger than Spain or Italy at the present time for payouts per team at the top division. But with the financial aspects in place, Wolfsburg, with a budget slash from where they get most of their money, and poor team performance, you're not able to attract the players, not able to attract the fans. All that put together is the reason why Wolfsburg now is in such a mire.
It's disappointing, because you look at some of these guys and you're saying to yourself, well, they should be playing a lot better, especially Schürrle. I was very... You see how he plays with the German national team, and he just has never really come together at the with the club sides, and perhaps it's a model thing, but I don't know.
It could be said as that, and Andre Schuler in the recent offseason moved in a decent money transfer over to Dortmund. He's done okay, but been mostly hurt this year. Wolfsburg has just not been it, and they've sold their big fish. They just have not been able to replace them with players of adequate quality that would be able to contribute to the team long term. It's been seen in most eyes, most fans, as a team where guys can basically show up and get a paycheck. You're not really expected to do all too much because you don't have you're not a traditional Mannschaft sort of team such as FC Köln, Borussia Mönchengladbach, Borussia Dortmund, Bayern München, my own club, Eintracht Frankfurt, Hertha Berlin. These clubs, VfB Stuttgart, who will be looked to be promoted from the second division after just having just a one-off year. These are clubs with huge fan bases, a huge winning tradition. Wolfsburg's only been in the Bundesliga since the 90s, a factory team. There's nothing in that town. The demands aren't high. And with all those elements all put together, it has really just rotted this team, and now they're playing against relegation. It is a scary thing.
And as we just started talking about Wolfsburg, they've gone down 1-0 to Bayern Munich. Fantastic cross into the box, or fantastic free kick. Speaking of the other team on this game, Munich's in an interesting spot, too. Obviously, it looks like they're going to claim their fifth consecutive Bundesliga title, but we're seeing...
Record fifth.
Yes. But we're seeing the end of an era here with Philipp Lahm likely leaving and Xabi Alonso also going this way. First, I guess, you know, he doesn't get talked about quite a bit, but Philipp Lahm is probably one of the best, most underrated players of his generation. For those who have not really followed him that much, what have we missed out on?
You've missed out on a player who spent 2 years on loan with Stuttgart in the early 2000s. And since the 2005-2006 Bundesliga season, he has not only been a first selection player for Bayern Munich, he took over the captain's armband from the great one, Oliver Kahn. And if anyone needs to even wonder who that guy is, just look through highlights from the 90s and early 2000s of this keeper who, let's put it this way, is the kind of guy that probably would be able to go toe-to-toe with Muhammad Ali. Just the fighting spirit that the guy had. He was a quiet guy who married his childhood sweetheart, was always a quiet personality. He's been a part of the German national team set up since 04, was part of Jürgen Klinsmann youth movement, part of the national team in 06 World Cup, you know, all the way to the 2014 World Cup, leading Germany to the title. Retired on top, smart thing to do. At 33, starting to deteriorate in the skill set of players such as him, who leads from the field, not so much in terms of like being a big personality. It's something that I would say is a very appealing aspect to Bayern Munich, that they like to say that it is a family being a part of Bayern Munich. And losing him is a huge identity that will be lost, and it's going to hurt. Xavi Alonso, the gentleman, has been waning for some time, but the thing was, he, in a deep line midfield role, has been able to open up passing. Granted, in the Bundesliga, when everyone's scared, well, most teams are always playing scared of Bayern Munich because they're Bayern, they're FC Hollywood, and everything. He's been able to prolong his career playing with one of the best teams in the world when, honestly, any team in Europe would have been happy, except for maybe Barcelona or Everton, would have been happy to have the player. His contributions, they've been reliant too much on the old legs. Philipp Lahm and Xavi Alonso leaving forces Bayern's hands just a little bit. Arjen Robben and Franck Ribéry have been a part of this team for quite some time. Franck Ribéry, since the mid-2000s, has been a vital part of this team. At 34, he can show up in the moments, and it seems that the flair is still there, but everyone knows that this guy's time is coming to an end, and he wants to end his time specifically at Bayern. Not so much known about Arjen Robben, who's 33. These players have been around, for these four players, all on the other side of 30, pretty decently so. There's a reason why Bastian Schweinsteiger was allowed to leave Bayern Munich 2 years ago to Manchester United, and is now kicking butt, pretty much, now that he's given a chance with the Chicago Fire. This team is now needing to find new leadership, new players to step up. Players who are there, who have not made the step up. One, Douglas Costa.
Wants to move out.
He hasn't been allowed to make his mark on the team as much as would be expected. I mean, you have players such as Rafinha, who's been in the Bundesliga forever. He's 31, going to be 32 at the start of the next season. There are old pieces at Bayern that they've known they've needed to move on. It's just with the new coach, with Carlo Ancelotti, one of the wisest heads in the game, not enough transition has been pushed into making this team young. They bought Mats Hummels, possibly the best defender in the world. Great in terms of just his defensive capabilities. Brilliant pair of feet. And can knock home some good goals from a header and his feet as well. You have Kingsley Coman. They need to either decide whether this 2-year loan spell from Juventus needs to be bought. Needs to be not. Joshua Kimmich was being used earlier in the year. He has seen very little playing time in the second half of the season. And Renato Sanchez was bought on this crazy deal for the European, before, you know, Portugal won the Euros. He was bought for $35 million from Benfica, and 18 has barely been used. This team needs these guys to step up, but no one has done so.
That's
Julian Green left. And Hugo Batistuta, two other names who have been there for a while. I say Julian Green with a pinch of salt because, you know, got to put the American in there. He's done actually well for Stuttgart, who I expect him to contribute next year for a Bundesliga club. But it's a team that consistently can win, but that's over a 34-match season, and when you add in the fact that you lost the Pokal semifinals, the way that they did to Dortmund, who very much is more of a younger team, a younger up-and-coming team. Well, I say up-and-coming considering the fact that they're more likely to be either third or fourth. Bayern, if they want to continue in Bayern, has got to continue to bring in the younger guys. Otherwise, stagnation. You may get the Bundesliga title, but at the big competition, the big table, you won't be making that big step up. And that was something in the mid-2000s that was starting to become a very, very big issue for Bayern.
Who do you think, what players have impressed you this season, and do you think maybe have earned a big contract in the summer?
Okay, so actually, Bayern, you know what the best part about them is? They're able to look at every player in the Bundesliga and basically say to them, you can come play for us. And most players, with exceptions, will jump at the chance because Bayern can pay more money than anybody else. End of statement, there are a few players in the world who would not go to Bayern, and they are at the other super clubs. They're lifelong servants of established teams like Schalke and Dortmund in Germany, or they're members of Real Madrid. They're a lifelong servant of Arsenal, teams that already have been Barcelona. Big profile teams. It's, with a few exceptions, no one will not take the chance of going to Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich has already snapped up two players from Hoffenheim who are expected, who is a team that is going into Europe for the first time. They're a primarily corporate funding club who happen to have an American on their books. He's playing in the second division at the time. Sebastian Rode is one. He's just at age 27. They announced that in January that he's making a big time move. At 27, he could be a good player for them. It's kind of, well, let's wait and see. He's able to play a right back role rather well, and we'll see more than likely in the Confederations Cup what he can do for Germany. But the big one is this new center back acquisition of Nika Sula, also from Hoffenheim. This kid has only just now started making an appearance for the German national team. He was seen in the Olympics. He's probably the most exciting up-and-comer and a defensive piece that will be very key in years to come, I am guessing. But it's kind of still relying on Robert Lewandowski up top, what he does. So Bayern, they've made a couple moves. We'll see what else they might do. There's been a lot of rumors that a certain Arsenal forward might be joining, but Bayern's got the money to spend, and no one says no to Bayern.
Yeah, nobody really does. I guess bringing it back stateside, Hertha Berlin, Jonathan Brooks, had a pretty good season. And seemed to really up his stock a little bit. Do you think he stays at Berlin this year, or does he go to England? I know I read Bild was saying that there was a German article about it, and he sounded like he was pretty much packing his bags for England.
Yes, not gonna lie, it's kind of hard to say no to the big English money. Look, to put it into perspective, now Hertha Berlin is a traditional Mannschaft. They're from the west side of the city, so when the Berlin Wall was a thing, they were the club of the West Berlin, which was part of West Germany as a country, despite the fact that it was in the middle of there. Give a brief history on them. Never won the Bundesliga title or the Pokal, but always been a German top flight participant. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Brooks has really learned his trade there. He's been a key part of the defense for years. This team has been one that they got surprisingly knocked out in the qualifying stage for the Europa League, and that would have been seen as, hey, we're able to make the next step up, you know, mid-table Bundesliga club, then goes to the Europa League, and then you kind of push on.
Mm-hmm.
I do see Brooks leaving, but I do, at this point, Hertha Berlin is pretty much locked solid to making Europe, and there's been a lot of foreign investment that companies who are putting money into the Bundesliga clubs, despite the 50-plus-1 rule, which at present is being very harshly examined, and I won't be surprised if within 3 years that is done away with, and suddenly you have a very, very sexy club that will be then available to be bought, because you're in Berlin, one of the most affluent cities in the world. You're with a team that has a traditional fan base. Yes, they don't fill the Olympic Stadium, but that's nearly 80,000 seats, and they're only able to average like 50-some-odd thousand a game. Fill it up for the big games, but that's only because a lot of away fans show up. Brooks is gone unless they basically give him another new contract, and he signed a new contract before the end of last season, so I really don't see how Hertha Berlin will keep him, but I do see Hertha Berlin, it's an American investment firm, put in about 30 million euros worth into the club within the last, I would say, 24 months. I mean, that's how they're able to keep John Anthony Brooks and some other key components there. St. Louis native, Vedvad Abisevic, you know, plays his trade there. He's a player that, should St. Louis win themselves a bid, I highly doubt it, to be playing in MLS. That will be a designated player who will definitely come over, but in terms of profile, that's a big club. They will lose Brooks, but the thing is, they'll be playing in Europe. You'll see them on Thursday night on Fox. Definitely come the fall.
So I guess we try to move to the stateside a little bit. You cover Sporting KC for our good friends, Post America. It feels like it's been a decent start to their campaign, but, I mean, kind of slow a little bit.
I would agree with that in part. The part that I would agree with, the slow start, they have 6 goals.
Mm.
6 goals on 7 matches. Now, you know, MLS has always been, like, even from the very first opening days of MLS in 1996, some of those games were pretty high scoring. But Sporting KC, they've really kind of stayed with a slow and steady wins the race, strong defense this year, which was something that last year they couldn't have a clean sheet to save their lives. Many points were lost, and once again they found themselves in the play-in game, and for the second year running, lost in the play-in game to the eventual MLS Cup champions. There's nothing to, you know, poo-poo about that. They only recently lost to FC Dallas last weekend, 1-0, but you know, aside from 2 matches, they've had 2 multi-goal matches all year. Both were wins. And the only other game in which they scored a goal was also a win. So if they score, they kind of tend to win. But then again, we've only had a handful of games so far this season. And this is in a league that, while it doesn't have relegation, has a lot of upside to it. And especially in the long-term future. But this is a team that brought in quite a few new faces and so far has been okay, just defensively great. Offensively, a lot that hasn't been fulfilled.
So, yeah, I see on that. I think that it seems like Graham Zusi is still trying to find his right role with the team, which is interesting because he's been there for about 7 years at this point. But the one guy I'm surprised he's not getting any time is Eric Palmer Brown. I mean, he had an incredible campaign time with Porto. He did really good in the CONCACAF Gold Cup under 20 championships, but comes back and he really has
for the first time. Yeah, this is to jump right on it. And I had a chance to speak with him at media day. Really enjoyed his time there. He said that for him, it really, the fact that he was playing alongside guys who, this was their livelihood. This is how they made sure that, you know, their kids, their wife, had clothes on their back, had food on the table. He said it was a real eye-opener. But the thing is, he hasn't really ever strongly featured for the senior team. He has, you know, like you said, gone out on loan. He was with Porto's B side playing basically every week for, their team, the reserve team, plays in the second division of Portugal, and he told me that he learned quite a lot, but yeah, he really hasn't been featured, and despite the fact, you know, being signed at 16 years old, and at one point Juventus supposedly made a $1 million bid for him, he hasn't really featured. Briefly featured for the Swift Park reserves, but right now, I don't see where exactly he will put himself into this team, because at present, the defense has been performing extremely good. He makes the bench, yes, but then again, so does a former player who was brought right back, Julião. Brought back in the offseason, hasn't really seen the light of day. Sasanovic has been able to force his way after being very much on the outside looking in. He's been playing. Aiko Parra has been healthy, and when he's healthy, he plays. And I think it's only a matter of time before Opara, as we've seen in basically year upon year upon year, is going to break down. And I think that's when Eric Paul Brown will probably have his chance to step up. But at present, when the team has got such a stifling defense, it's kind of hard to push him in. That's what everyone really wants. But then again, there's a lot of development that there's a lot for him to develop as a player, and he needs to do that by playing time. But until something changes, he's going to stay on the bench.
I think he'll get time, especially if they get an Open Cup run in them. I think that it's just a matter of finding the right space, to be honest. Probably, given what quality side the U20s have, having him play more national team games at this point, given their possibility that they could be able to go deep into a tournament, might be better just suited there. I guess, you know, it's time will tell, right?
In terms of development, I would say that for him, probably what is the most important going forward is making sure that, you know, whatever contributions he's able to do. But not going to lie, in this time, within under now 30 days in South Korea, is to be the U20 World Cup. Perhaps there has been a request, please make sure he does not get hurt, because I foresee him as being a key member of that team. And you know, that is a tournament where he can definitely shine, and who knows, maybe Sporting has technically thinking, you perform there, you're in a group with, as I pulled this up, Senegal, Saudi Arabia, and Ecuador. You're able to get to the knockout phase of that. You're able to prove many, many success stories from the under-20 championship are players who get spotted there who had yet to make any moves, and we're able to kind of create a great, long-lasting professional career from there. And it honestly would not surprise me if they, at that point, after that tournament ends, that there's an offer on the table. And a healthy kid who doesn't have a lot of wear and tear on the legs, because some kids, when they're age 20 as he is right now, have already played a lot of soccer and could break down, you know, start breaking down their latter 20s. Perhaps this is more beneficial for him long time, physically speaking.
Speaking of the youth, we had an interesting situation this week where the United States under 17s beat Mexico for the first time in an international competition. That coupled with the under 20s, I mean, we're only, 6 months out of the whole Klinsmann gate and the where are we going as a national team mind fuck that we've had for a while. that it's interesting now that these results are coming through that the tone has changed a little bit. I mean, obviously I don't think you watched the match, and I didn't either, but do you feel like at least the youth, some of the players being brought up, it's brought a little bit more optimism to this program?
I think a lot of what now Jurgen Klinsmann, under his time, that was something that he always talked about as needing to be important going forward. And we hadn't really seen much results, but I think that perhaps bringing in the right kind of guys and, you know, the CONCACAF Under 17 championship victory over Mexico means that they're advancing to the next stage. which is really great, because then it's a three-team group phase format for a final, where the winners of each group face each other, and then you got this runner-up game. So for me, I think the important thing to focus on is what are the youth able to do, having them get the opportunities to play. And I think that at the youth level, and I work as a youth referee, the youth level soccer that there's an organization is miles beyond what it was 5 years ago. It is just absolutely miles beyond. You have now, you have kids from the inner cities, and I happen to live in Kansas City, Missouri, happen to referee on fields that are located in the inner city. I see teams and kids who are coming from the inner city parts, which has always been something that the teams have always struggled to get players from. Next step is really getting kids from the rural areas. How are teams in what are considered third world countries, how are these males able to kind of make it as a professional? They see themselves coming from the impoverished, and they see soccer as a way out of it. Soccer, in terms of professionalism in this country, has gone leaps and bounds on what it was in 96. It's absurdly revolutionized the way that we kind of interpret it. And kids who never thought about soccer, who thought, oh, it's a girly sport and everything, are now having second thoughts about it and are considering using that as a way to good, make a life, make a career. And you're seeing it through the youth ranks. I think it just has been coupled with what Jurgen Klinsmann wanted to get more involved, get the players at the younger levels, not playing, you know, at 7, 8 years old, not having them play 11v11 on these gargantuan fields, but have them play 7-a-side, 8-a-side on smaller fields so that you're able to emphasize on individual skills. And I think the long-term benefits will show through. Just Jurgen Klinsmann was long since been out, and he was part of very much how the German Revolution has happened, and the fact that there's so much investment, so many youth players coming through in each individual Bundesliga team, that his organization, when they decided to overhaul everything, is what has resulted in Germany becoming this dominant force as a national team, and I think that will come forth in the United States. It's just, guys, just understand, Rome wasn't built in a day, and neither will a World Cup winning team. Yeah. And I think it starts from the youth, and it has been coming through. Jurgen Klinsmann laid the foundations to get more youth playing in a way that will develop them better. It's just a wait-and-see kind of aspect, but I like everything that's been coming through.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think this Under-20 World Cup in particular is going to be a really interesting program, and apparently the latest news is that Christian Pulisic is still on the table, possibly to be playing, which I'm not sure how I feel about that, but it shows that the U.S. is taking this seriously.
I'm okay with that as myself, but that's specifically for the fact that you want to look back to, let's go back to the 2007 team, and let's just look up some of the players that were playing for the United States at that time and see what guys have gone on to do great things. There was DC's, well, he played in the Bundesliga, and for DC, Brian Arguez was one. He eventually played in the Bundesliga a little bit in the second division. Has since Michael Bradley, Robbie Rogers, Dax McCarthy, Freddie Adu, Jozy Altidore, Sal Zizo, Tony Peralta. But these are guys who ended up doing quite a few bits for the United States at the senior level. For a couple of those guys are huge pieces. That is a team that produced a lot of guys that went forward from that championship, you know, and that's how most of these guys come through. And for me, the United States, it's got to be focused on the youth, and with as more and less teams are available, put these under 20 guys on those teams as they pop up here, there, and everywhere. The same thing at the USL level, have them loan out and develop themselves as players, because how else are you going to develop as an international team? I mean, Breck Shea played himself at a U20 along with Mix Discord, and those guys have had not too bad of professional careers.
No, I agree with you, and I think that the big thing is this Gold Cup upcoming in the summer, and if we don't use this as an opportunity to find newer players, to find good players experience, then I don't know what to say, because it has some consequence, but it really doesn't have any consequence, and it's something that if we use it properly, it could be a very good tool to be able to develop players. Like, I'm looking at Cameron Carter-Vickers, and I'm saying, you need to be playing for the Gold Cup with us this summer. You're clearly ready to play club football. Whether or not it's at Tottenham is going to be another question, but you're ready to play some senior-level minutes. Let's get you experience, particularly against these Central American sides, which are very different style of play than what you're used to in England. And let's get you experience playing against, you know, in conditions and areas that are not particularly beneficial to your health. but it's just an interesting time, because we're seeing, you and I both know, as journalists, it's hard to keep up with how many of these guys are popping up. Like, there's a guy for the U-17s who's playing for Fiorentina. That's...
Josh Perez?
Yes. And, I mean, did anybody really know about him 6 months ago? No. But now it's like, oh, well, this is... I mean, you know, he was on the roster for Fiorentina for a couple of Coppa d'Italia games. I mean, that's, you know, that's massive. And so now we got to pay attention to this guy. And I'm just curious to see how we're going to bring in all these different guys from different backgrounds with a more domestic coach, but just somebody that maybe isn't particularly scouting. That was the impression that I got from Bruce Arena talking to him, that it's just he's here to coach. But, you know, when you have all these guys who are 20, 18, 19, 20, who are breaking big-time minutes in Europe, you better start giving them playing time. Otherwise, they'll, especially those who are dual nationals, will start looking elsewhere.
I can totally agree on that, especially when you have players who are sprinkled here, there, and everywhere. You got guys playing on the books of Liga MX teams, and then guys who do make that decision that, you know, I want to try myself in a youth setup in Europe, because plenty of guys go out to the Balkans due to the fact that they had parents who were from Croatia, Serbia, Bosnia-Herzegovina. Plenty of guys who just are not on the radar, who they could make a difference. I just look at one that we lost, this is many years ago, Nevin Subotic, plays for FC Köln, that is still technically on the books, Borussia Dortmund. He was one that we lost, that we could seriously have gotten. We didn't exactly get him. John Delaney, who now is at Werder Bremen, is a key part of the Danish national team, and had actually gone to the U.S. setup, tried to see if he could get in. Another Bob Bradley push away that we could have gotten, but due to dual nationality, we didn't get. It's got to get him young.
Andy Nahar. I mean, we can just go to D.C. and look at what he's done with Anderlecht, and that's another one.
He could hardly, if I seem to recall, he had a hard time speaking English enough as was, as I recall from more than one interview that I had heard of him.
Yeah, it's gotten better. But it's, you know, I mean, that's somebody that would, he's still, what, probably 26 at this point? So, you know, could be playing. But I guess it's what it could have, should have, you know. You only have so many places and people that you can be able to invest in, and yeah, it's a question of where do you put your time in. And it looks like we've gotten ourselves a few gems in the past couple of years, especially with Carter Vickers, Pulisic, and the like. So, well, Brian, this has been fun. Where can we find you on Twitter? What are you working on this week? And any predictions for Champions League this week?
I would have to say that over the two legs, Juventus and Monaco is the most interesting, because you have BBC, that defensive layout. Juventus also has a great array of attacking power. Mm-hmm. Gonzalo Higuain, I mean, they paid boatloads of money for him. it's more interesting to me than just seeing the Madrids go at it, because you got the sexy attacking power of Monaco versus the almighty defense that's been together for years and years of Juventus. It's possibly the most interesting stuff that we could possibly have, and not gonna lie, it's kind of hard to even overlook the Madrids. I do see Monaco going through on aggregate, along with Atletico, and having another defensive team versus attacking team, blow by blow knockout. That'd probably be the most exciting final we could possibly ask for. And you can find me on Twitter at KCSGE on Twitter, and you can find my writings at Prost America, working on a piece on the Hoffenheim coach who came out of nowhere, 27 years old when he took over Hoffenheim when they're in relegation trouble, and now has got them nearly qualified for Champions League. Got a bunch of now he can get them into Europe. It's fascinating, but it's a story that I'm working on.
The boy genius making us all looking at the age of 10 or age of 27. I got Monaco going through. I just really like them as a squad. I think that they did their work against Dortmund, and I think that their speed is going to be a huge issue for Juventus. The Juventus backline, though, is scary. and then in terms of the other match, I think Atletico finally gets the win. I mean, they've had two finals against them, against Real, and they've lost both. I think Simeone feels that this, I don't know how much longer he's going to stick around there, but I feel like it's going to be pretty good. So we shall see. Well, thanks everybody for listening, and keep enjoying Radio MLS. Stop. Cool, man. What are you up to the rest of the day?
Well, a little bit of lunch. Going to.